The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's going on, Bills Mafia? I'm Fernando Chemuzzi, and that's your Leading the Charge. And today I have Randy Hardman with me again to talk some Combine. It's Combine week, and we know a lot of the prospects that the Bills have an eye on are in Indy testing right now. Other prospects aren't even testing, but they are there still, right? And Randy Hardman joins me today to talk about some of the prospects that I have already tested, some that only have interviewed, others will interview still and test. So a lot of stuff is going on in Indy, and we'll talk a lot about it. Randy, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us in the Leading the Charge today again.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Bills Mafia, feel free to interact via chat. It's live on YouTube. Obviously, the show will be on Spotify and Apple Podcasts right after it finishes here. And Randy, to get it going, before talking Combine and talking all the prospects, I want to share with you a conversation that I had yesterday with a friend, Lucas Sacramento. Shout out to Lucas. And we were talking, man, about the evolution of this Bills team and especially the evolution of Sean McDermott. And let me put it out here, because for a lot of people, I'm a Sean McDermott hater, or I don't want him. I want him fired. For a lot of people, they see me as this kind of person. And for other people, they see me just a one more podcaster that is always on McDermott's side or always defending McDermott. And in truth, it drives me nuts, man, because nowadays, it's so difficult. You can't kind of criticize nobody without being put in a bucket, you know, like, or you hate the guy and you 100% don't want him, or you love the guy and he can do no wrong. And I feel like there is a lot in between those two buckets. And about McDonald's, I felt like this. I felt like he's been a great coach for the Bills since he took over. I feel like he's done a great job, and even worth of a Coach of the Year award, maybe in the year that the Bills finally ended the drought and got into the playoffs in a year they weren't supposed to be that competitive, right? But as well, I feel like it's fair to expect him to do better, especially in elimination games or when the lights are brighter, you know, and especially since we are competing against, when you talk about Josh and Patrick Mahomes, Josh is competing against the very best in the league. He got to be at his best as well. And for some people, he hasn't been good enough. For other people like me, I feel like he's played more than enough to beat Mahomes on some playoff games, and unfortunately didn't have enough help. And when talking about McDermott, he's competing against Andy Reid. He's competing against Spags, he's competing against great coaches, and he gotta be at his best as well. And I feel like he hasn't been up to that level, but he's been developing. I've seen some some steps in the right direction, especially in his last year, like in end of game situations when he started to try to be more aggressive with his defense and not sit down and wait for give away a field goal, just trying to avoid a touchdown in late game situations. We saw him changing his approach against the Chiefs, against the Dolphins, in several situations. And now he just changed his coaching staff, right? He made a lot of changes, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where he has Babich now as his defensive coordinator, a young guy. He has a new coach for the cornerbacks and defensive backs, right? Moving on from a long-time veteran coach. He moved on from a long-time veteran coach at defensive line as well. I feel like it's another step in McDermott's evolution, McDermott's development as a head coach. Like in the past, he was a rookie head coach with Leslie Frazier, a former head coach, more experienced guy on his side, you know, maybe listening a lot to him. And now he's one of the most experienced, if not the most experienced coach in that coaching staff. And he has some young bucks coming in. And maybe I don't want to be naive, but I want to believe he's trying to listen to different people, listen to more innovative new minds in the game with those young coaches, and maybe trying to adapt. Maybe he saw that he can't beat Mahomes and the Chiefs playing soft zones, and he got to play more man coverage, and maybe he's trying to go more in that direction. So a lot of the changes that are going on in his staff, and it points out for me like another step in McDermott's development as a head coach. If it's going to pan out or not, we'll see. But I feel like it's trending that direction. And I'd like to hear from you, Randy. How do you see this McDermott development as a head coach? And now all those moves he's done. He's done the move on the offensive side in season, firing Dorsey, elevating Brady. And now he's changing his defensive coaching staff, his background, where he really dominates and where he's supposed to be a mastermind. How do you see all this development in this offseason for the Bills and the expectation going forward?
Well, I mean, with McDermott, I think, as with most things, the truth lies somewhere in the middle between, you know, he's awesome and, you know, he deserves to be fired. You know, it's he's been – I don't think there's really any argument he's been our best coach on staff since Marv Levy. Some people might say Wade Phillips, but I think, you know, he's the best coach we've had since Marv Levy. Doesn't mean he's without fault. Doesn't mean that he's perfect. He's not. You know, we've seen him, you know, make some bad decisions, and you know, the Dorsey hire was probably not quite the best move, but he, credit to him for pulling the plug when he had to, because otherwise the season was heading in a terrible direction that he may not have survived had he not made that decision. So, you know, I think the staff decisions that he made this year are good. I think that after so many seasons of being in the same position and not being able to get over the hump, you have to change things up. You know, obviously something's not working. You got to find, you got to bring in different voices to figure out maybe if there's something that you're missing. So, Eric Washington taking the job in Chicago, you know, I think he did a good job filling that spot for defensive line coach. I think Babich coming in, taking over, moving from linebackers to the defensive coordinator. I'll be really interested to see kind of what his stamp is on the defense, especially with the turnover that's happening on the defensive line and also in the back end, in the safety room, and also maybe on the edges with the corners. Really the entire defense. I think there's a lot of unknowns going on there right now, more so than maybe a lot of people realize. So that'll be an exciting part of this offseason.
Yeah, 100%, man. And another thing that has caught some attention was the comments from Steve Tasker recently in a Bills official podcast, right? When asked about the quarterbacks for next season and who did he see as the tandem starting the season at the cornerback on the edges? And he said Benford and Elam, to some people's surprise, because obviously we have Tre'Davious White still rehabbing and expected to play next season. We still have Rasul Douglas, who has a lot of money tied to him, like in the cap situation, right? You can open some cap cutting him, but or trading him. Obviously, maybe a renegotiation, an extension maybe is more interesting to open some of that cap, since he's been really good for the Bills since arriving. But the Bills have all those options, and for a guy like Steve Tasker, who's inside the building, obviously not inside the locker room, but he's part of the Bills organization, to say something like that can be only a guess, but also can be something that he's been paying attention in the building. And every year we talk about maybe moving Benford to safety, and now with the changes in the defensive back coaching staff and just like you said, on all the defense, maybe the Bills will try to change their approach. Obviously, we know Sean McDermott's style, his defense, his schemes, how he loves to play zone, and it works very well against the majority of the teams. But also, you gotta have some answers. You gotta have some repertoire to change and to offer different looks and to play more men sometimes, especially against the Chiefs. And obviously, that's what Elon's strengths are supposed to be. Can you see maybe the Bills going that direction with this new defensive back coach and even something that I haven't seen a lot of people talk about, but even moving maybe Rasul Douglas to safety, because that's a big cornerback, a guy who can tackle, a guy who can play make and attack the ball, a guy that maybe if you need to man up against a tight end, we even saw him playing some man against Kelce in some situations. So could you see, instead of Benford being tried out there, maybe Benford, maybe Rasul moving there to offer that experience and that playmaking skills at the safety position instead of a guy like Benford, or do you don't see that being a fit or something good for his skill set?
I don't think Douglas moves to safety. I think it's more likely that they, you know, would either move off of him completely or, you know, give him an extension. I honestly, with Tasker, I think more than likely he just forgot about Douglas in the heat of the moment, really. I mean, you know, I listened to the clip. It sounded like he just kind of forgot about Rasul Douglas. I've listened to that show for several years, on and off. You know, Tasker is great, but you know, sometimes things just slip his mind. I think this is one of those cases, so I wouldn't read too much into it. I think going into next year, you're probably looking at Douglas and Benford, and I'm sure that Elam will get every opportunity to earn that job from scratch. But he's not coming in as an incumbent. Now, you've got a new DBs coach, as you mentioned, and possibly a scheme switch as far as their philosophy. So, you know, anything can happen. But right now, I think Elam is behind, you know, is behind the top two guys. Benford could move to safety. They talked about that when he was drafted. But he's been so good as a corner, you know, and Elam wasn't. But Elam also had an issue with John Butler. John Butler's gone. As I said before, there's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of uncertainty. And so I think as you go through OTAs and mini camps and eventually training camp, you know, we'll see things come into a more clear picture. But, you know, if I were to guess right now, I think it's probably going to be Douglas Benford to start the year.
Awesome. Got it. Bills Mafia, hit that like button, subscribe to Buffalo Rumblings channel and support us. Buffalo Rumblings as well has been covering the draft and a lot of articles in the website, so check it out. And I will even throw some of the stuff here on the screen during our conversation. And so let's start talking combine, Randy. And we saw already the defensive tackles interviewing and then testing, right? We saw the safeties interviewing and a lot of news regarding the Bills. Like, the Bills are meeting everybody, it seems like. Every safety, every wide receiver, you know, all the talk is the Bills having meetings against all the top guys, all the guys that have more recognition, the name more recognized. So, how did you see the first day of testing yesterday? Who do you think are worth some mentions? Who are raising the boards? Who do you see having some trouble? We saw some interesting stuff yesterday during the test, right?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as, you know, day one, D tackles and D linemen put on a show. There was only a couple people that really disappointed. I know Fisk from Florida State was the big standout. He's the one everybody's talking about. If he were there at 28, it's something you got to consider. Tavondre Sweat from Texas was a big one. I don't think that you take a guy like that in the first round unless he's like Vita Vea type special. And I don't think Sweat is, personally. But definitely, you know, round two, three, if he's there, yeah. I think chances are we're going to see at least two D linemen taken by the Bills in this draft, one relatively early and one more than likely on one or more on day three with the number of picks that we have. So when you're going through the results and all that, over this weekend, kind of keep a mindset on not all these guys are going to be day one guys. Not all these guys are going to be day two guys. So a lot of these guys are going to slip into day three. And so you're looking at value and fit there. One of the guys that I know Judge over at Cover One mentioned, I saw him a couple times this year when he played against Colorado and then one or two other games where I caught him. But Muhammad Kamara from Colorado State is one of those day three guys that I look at and say, you know, I feel like he could probably come in and, you know, get you know, some light rotation and then on special teams and then work his way into the lineup down the road. I mean, that's a guy that I would look at on day three and say there's talent to work with here. And even though his measurables might not be in the upper echelon or in the upper percentile range, he's a guy that I would look at and be excited about trying to get on day three and maybe in round five or six or somewhere in that range. As far as day one, I mean, Chop Robinson came out and had a great day. Fisk had a great day. I think Darius Robinson from Missouri didn't quite do what some people were thinking he was going to do. But again, all this stuff is, in one aspect, it's a tool that you use to go in comparison with the tape and with the game film, and then also how they interview and what they're like in the room. I think that's one of the things that we don't get to see in the combine that I'm sure everyone would love to see, and they do love to see it when they show it, you know, down the road, is how these guys interview, what's their demeanor like when they walk into a room. Even when they're at the podium, certain things. I know I mentioned it today with the receivers, you know, when they had Xavier Leggett up there and they asked him about, you know, the Bills and Josh Allen, and he just got this like grin on his face, and you could tell he was trying not to smile too hard, you know. Yeah. Thinking about the idea of playing with an upper tier quarterback. Why wouldn't you as a receiver want to play with a top quarterback? But yeah, it was just things like that, you know, noticeable things where, like, you know, if he was so concerned about, for example, like the weather or whatever, maybe he wouldn't be so excited, but doesn't care. You know, I want to go play with an elite quarterback, because guess what that means? In 4 or 5 years, that means more money for me. So I think this weekend is great. It'll get overanalyzed and microanalyzed by a lot of people. I take it for what it is. I think it's a lot of fun for us. And I'm looking forward to Saturday, definitely.
Yeah, no doubt, man, no doubt. And talking about those big guys, so you mentioned Tavondre Sweat, right, from Texas, a guy who I like a lot. Your prototype nose tackle, more of a two-down defensive tackle, nose tackle type, right? And the Bills haven't really used those kind of guys recently. Even since we brought Star Otulele, he wasn't that big despite playing this kind of role, and now Daquan Jones is playing this role as our nose tackle.
But, well, let me correct you there, because we think that they haven't used those type of guys. But Smut's snap percentage is equivalent to Daquan Jones's snap percentage at 56%. So there is a role for a guy like Trevondre Sweat on this team as it stands, like as they have operated, you know, in previous years. So I don't want to get too far into the idea that maybe he's not a fit. He is. He could definitely be a fit here. But again, the value on day one, I don't think is there.
Yeah, and even if we think about the changes in the coaching staff, that's why I wanted to talk to you about it in the introduction, because maybe some stuff that didn't used to work for those guys that were in the building, now with the new minds talking to McDermott, they can change some stuff. Like, no, you know what? Bring me that big guy to be your nose tackle and to occupy two blockers and to keep Bernard and Milano free, and, you know, or no, give me that edge guy that maybe is not that big and but is a little bit lighter, but has that quick first step and can be a velociraptor type edge rusher, you know. So some of the guys that weren't fit in the past might be now, and when people say that Trevondre Sweat maybe is not the fit here, maybe he wasn't, but just like you said, there is a space in the rotation, and the guy just 366 pounds, 6'4", almost 6'5", and run 5.2 40-yard dash, that I saw somewhere that adjusted time, it was like for a cornerback like 5'10 and 170, 180 pounds, it would be the equivalent to a 4.26. What's crazy. So 5.2 for a guy of that size is really impressive, and how smooth he was running that 40-yard dash. Right, and his split seconds are 10-yard split was good as well. So this guy is don't fool yourself. This guy is a great athlete for his size, right, Randy? And I really feel like I would love to have him in the rotation, and especially playing alongside Ed Oliver on early downs, like kind of giving the Bills some beef since Oliver is a smaller type there. So I feel like Bills could use this guy, right? And maybe at 28, it's too early for him. But if he falls a little bit, would you go after him like in the second round or maybe just in the third round?
Maybe. I mean, you know, there's a long way between now and draft day, draft weekend. Mm-hmm. So you just there's a lot that you can do to kind of determine where his ultimate value lies. But, you know, I know I posted the other day, and I feel like that where we are and where this class is that we're in a great spot this year to go back about 10 spots and to pick up mm-hmm. some extra high day three or other day two picks this year and maybe in the future. But primarily I'd be looking at this year to try and pick up a couple extras because, you know, at 28, it's a wonderful spot for somebody from 33 to 40 to come up and get a quarterback with a fifth-year option. You know, you saw it with Lamar Jackson when the Ravens came up to get him. And I think that, you know, this year with a guy, apparently J.J. McCarthy is going to be going high. I don't get that at all. But, you know, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, Spencer Rattler, all those guys, somebody could come up and want to grab them in the first to get the extra fifth year. We should be open for business at 28 if that's the case. Move back into the mid-30s, maybe I would say 40 at the latest. Compile a couple extra picks, and so that way you can maybe get a Trevondre Sweat on day two, you know, at the end, like in round three, for example. Or if you get another later second-round pick, maybe he can be your second-round pick. And you can still get a wide receiver you know, with that first pick in the second round, you know, at the top of the second round, because some of those guys, they will fall. You're not going to have 10 receivers going in the first round. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. So, you know, maybe 1 through 5 get drafted in the first, but in the top of the second, you got your pick of the litter between 6 and 10, depending on the spot. So I think it's a good situation for us. We could stay at 28 and take whatever we want there based on availability. You want to take a receiver, there's going to be plenty to pick from. There should be defensive linemen to pick from there. There should be a couple defensive ends to pick from there. So, you know, I think the Bills are in a good spot. I think we're going to have plenty of opportunity to get the most out of that pick.
Yeah, man. I tweeted recently about a mock-off season that I've done, and I was really happy with that situation. I had some possibilities of trading down out of the first round. I ended up with picks 35, 39, not only from the trade down from the first round, right, but moving during the draft. I ended up with 35, 39, 61, 105, and 150. And in those five picks inside the top 150, I could get Tavondre Sweat, Xavier Worthy, and you even told me the wrong Xavier, right? But still could have been Legette. He was available. So yeah. I got Sweat, Worthy, Nubbin, falling to 61. Obviously, it's a mock draft. Changes can happen before the draft. Van Pran at 105. That's a guy who I really like as a center from Georgia. And Kamara that you just talked about and run 4.5, I believe, yesterday, and is an interesting prospect as an edge that maybe can play some special teams to begin his career. So that how would be get me really excited about what the Bills could do in the draft, because a lot of value, and just like you said, the opportunity to trade out of the first round is still get all those kind of weapons for this team, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many scenarios you can run through, and that's certainly one of them. The safeties, I know that we're meeting with a lot of safeties. But again, I don't see a lot of those guys as being day one guys. So you're talking again about day two. And you can see a theme developing here is that there's a lot of guys on day two that you want. But right now we only got, what, three picks or two? We got a second and third, or we got two thirds, right?
Yeah.
There's a couple. Well, the comp pick hasn't been released yet, so we only have one third.
The comp pick. Yeah.
But we should be getting a third for losing Tremaine Edmonds, and then – you know, whatever else happens could be on top of that. But, I mean, right now you got two picks and there's about 10 guys that you want to take on day two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. Ideally, you trade all the other picks to day two, you know, and have all 10 picks inside the second and the third.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot that can happen between now and the draft weekend. We all know that. And it'll be exciting to see how it all shakes out. But I don't think there's any shortage of options for us.
Mm-hmm. A shout out to all guys from Brazil here in the chat. Franklin sending a go Bills from Brazil. And Leo is sending a question here about the guy I want to talk next, Randy. I want to pump on the brakes a little bit every time we talk about the next Kyle Williams, because obviously I have Kyle at the highest regard at defensive tackle position in as a Buffalo Bill, right? But Leo is commenting about leadership, work ethic, the rest, score, motor, good technique, physical similarity to Kyle Williams, in addition to need. Randy, do you see the Bills betting big on Brandon Fiks if he doesn't renew, if they can keep Daquan? You said something about Fisk really popping out yesterday with his testing. And do you believe he already put himself in contention for round one and the pick 28? Like, you think he put himself in that situation? Yeah.
Yeah. After the day that he put up yesterday, if the interviews and all that go well, he's squarely into that round one conversation. He could be
good senior bowl, right?
Yeah, in the senior bowl. He could be outside of our reach. We might have to go up to get him if we wanted him. That's how good he's been killing the process so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I think if they wanted to, you know, and the thing is, like, they could re-sign Daquan, but again, he's like 33, you know, he's not going to play forever. So even if he gets a 2-year extension, there's nothing saying that they're not going to draft a guy or two behind him in those spots to A, rotate, and B, eventually be the heir apparent. I mean, if you're talking about a first round pick, if Daquan's here for 2 years and he gets a 56% snap share anyway, you're going to be seeing a lot of that first-round pick, in theory, as long as he doesn't completely bust out. And then you're going to have him for three more years on top of that after Jones is gone. So it makes a lot of sense. I know everyone wants receiver in round one. I want a receiver in round one. Yeah. But that may not be what happens. So you got to be prepared and understand that anything is on the table, including the dreaded D lineman in round one that that nobody really wants to hear about, but it's a distinct possibility that could happen.
Yeah, the test, the Brandon Fisk test was really crazy, right? Great testing and leading the defensive tackle group in the 40-yard dash, the vertical jump, the broad jump, the shuttle. So the guy is an athlete at the defensive tackle spot.
Yeah. There's some defensive ends. You know, I know there's a couple of the mocks have Chop Robinson getting taken. I am of the opinion that if somebody like Leatu Latu were to fall, to pick 16, 17, 18, 20, something like that, I would not be shocked to see Brandon Bean move up and take an edge rusher like Latu to be an immediate impact guy coming off the edge to generate pressure and get sacks, because we need it desperately. And as of right now, there's nothing that indicates that Von Miller is going to be the player that he was or that he was supposed to be when we signed him, that he was for those first eight games. We saw nothing this past year that says he's going to come back and be that guy. And Greg Rousseau is a good player, but Latu offers a different skill set than what Rousseau brings to the table, which is good. It's good to have varied abilities. So I could definitely see something like that happening as well. There's so many different options that we have in this draft. You're talking about like Chris Jenkins or possibly like Byron Murphy, even though he's a little bit on the smaller side stature wise, but he's a versatile guy that can move around the D line. There's so many different options, and we're really early in the process.
How about Chop Robinson? That's another guy who tested really, really well, and he's not maybe a prospect like Latu, but he's a nice edge rusher as well. And can you see maybe Bean moving up for him or drafting him at 28? He falling to 28. How do you see Chop after his testing and with his tape?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a possibility there. I don't know if that would be my favorite pick. I know that some people really like Robinson. If it were to happen, I'm nervous about taking edges and D linemen in the first, because we've seen it. It's just kind of recent memory. We've seen it so many times and it hasn't worked out more often than not, as far as being like an instant impact, high value player. Groot's been great, but I think that's about what he has brought and where he was drafted is about what you can expect from a guy taken that late. Anything better is a huge, huge, huge bonus. You don't expect somebody taken at 28 to be, a 10, 12, 15 sack guy. So if that were to happen, it'd be awesome. I don't know. I see where Robinson is being mocked to us in a couple places. I think it's okay. I wouldn't be over the moon about it, but I wouldn't be upset about it either.
Got it. Still a defensive tackle. We talked about Byron Murphy. I will get there. I feel like he established himself as what we were expecting, right? Like, he tested well. The tape is there, and probably he's not falling to the 28th pick, in my opinion. I don't see him falling there with his testing confirming what we were expecting, right? Do you have an expectation for Murphy to be there at 28? And if he's there, is that the guy that you would pick? I personally would run to the podium and pick him if he's there at 28. But
I'd be surprised if he's anywhere close to 28. I wouldn't be upset at all if they took him, if he made it to 28, or if Bean did his normal, throw in a fourth round and move up two spots or whatever, if he were to get down that far. I wouldn't be shocked or upset about that at all. I don't think it's going to be anywhere close to that. I'm sure he'll probably go in the top, the top 20. But yeah, I mean, after the day that he had and what he's done in Texas, I don't think he's going to get to us.
Yeah, and the last guy I'd like to talk about, the defensive tackle group, before talking about another edge is Mason Smith from LSU. That's a guy that I've been seen myself picking a lot on my mock drafts, like in the third round, sometimes even in the fourth. But that's a guy that is an athlete for that size, 6'5", 306 pounds, tested really well in the combine as expected. And this guy kind of fits the profile for the defensive tackles the Bills like to have in the rotation. He has the I feel like he has a lot to work with and a lot to be coached by the new defensive line coach and to be developed as a really good defensive tackle in the league because the traits, the physical traits are there. Do you feel like it's a good option for the Bills? How high or low are you on Smith so far?
I mean, I think Mason Smith falls squarely into that group of guys that could go like somewhere in the mid to late day two or day three, like early day three. And it'd be a perfectly fine pick for Buffalo to bring in a guy like a Mason Smith or it's another one. Gabe Hall from Baylor is another one where I could easily see those guys being, picked probably like I would say for those two, probably I would prefer like mid to high day three. Would be my preferred range for them, not to overdraft them a little bit, but coming in, taking those guys, taking one of those guys and bringing them in, part of the rotation, special teams, all that, and earning a spot from there. I think both of those are great options, and you can throw Kamara in that group too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kamara.
If you're looking for a bigger guy, Dwayne Carter from Duke is another one. I kind of like his profile, what he would bring. Some people are getting on Tyler Davis from Clemson. Again, so many options, right? Mm-hmm. So many options that you could go with. And I think it helps not to pigeon yourself into one particular guy, especially with a defensive line, because there are all these different, guys that could fill a role for us. And we're going to need more than one. We will need more than one. That's undeniable, whether it's draft or free agency or however we go about filling it, we need D linemen and we need several. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. And the last edge that I'd like to talk about is a guy that is falling down now after his testing, and a guy who's being caught in a interesting situation where his res score is like very good as a defensive tackle, but he'd be undersized there. And not so good as an edge rusher, where he would be a big defensive end, and that's Darius Robinson from Missouri. And this guy was talked as a potential first-round pick, right? I mean, he might fall to the Bills at 28, and now with his testing, people are even talking about him falling even more. Man, when I look at Darius Robinson, and I know sometimes it's unfair. They are different guys, different players, different schemes, different schools. But all I can remember is Boogie Basham, man, with this, his res score, his physical type, as an edge rusher. How do you see Darius Robinson with his testing and the possibilities of the Bills going after him after the failure of Boogie Basham in the second round for the Bills? Am I wrong to compare them?
Yeah,
on the field, or how do you see that?
Well, I mean, they're different players. They're different players, obviously. You don't know what motivates them and all that, all the stuff inside. But as far as on the surface, yeah, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you, right? So
yeah,
I look at Robinson as a guy who's, probably a better inside player than an outside player. And, yeah, it does remind you eerily of Boogie Basham. And so, and based on his testing yesterday in round one, I don't think so. And in round two, I mean – I think if you know that you have a way to utilize them, sure, if you want to go that direction in round two or three, again, I could see the fit. But are there other guys that you could get in the mid to top of day three that may be able to do all the same things that Robinson can bring and that allows you to go in a different direction with those day two picks? I think that's your answer right there, honestly.
Mm-hmm. 100%, man. And about the safeties, now we're going to start talking about some people that haven't really tested yet, just interviews and telling the media about their meetings with the Bills. And more often than not, they're not talking anything really that makes a difference. They only reporting how did it go with the Bills, how they were talking ball with their coaches and interview, the Bills checking how good they can process the game. And but I can't help myself to mention that one guy that haven't interviewed with the Bills, he already said something, Randy, that in my opinion, he's worth the trade up, and you can send future first, you can send anything you want, because when Malik Nabers says that Jordan or LeBron, he says Jordan without hesitation. For me, that guy's wide receiver one on the board now, you know. Like, he's so smart that you gotta go up and bring him on. Jokes aside, man.
Yeah.
I feel like the Bills have been interviewing, have been connected to every top name, right, in the wide receiver and the wide receiver group and the safety group. And I'm happy to see that that's going on, because I want the Bills connected and gathering the most information possible from all those guys. Just like you said all the time, all so many options, man. And a lot of them can really help the Bills as at safety and at wide receiver. How do you see those guys separating themselves from the pack with the testing? Who do you think maybe really needs something special at some situation that can put them over each other in that situation in the Bills board at safety and at wide receiver that we saw only the interview so far?
Well, I think at safety they're going to be looking for a couple things. They're going to be looking for intelligence and versatility, and you know, among other things. But they're going to be looking for maybe somebody that might be slightly undervalued. I know they're talking to all the safeties, but I still feel like with this head coach, even though Butler is gone and he was a big part of that defensive backfield room and the way that they developed over the years, but I still think that this is a team that can develop corners and safeties very well. So I'd be looking at some of these guys that might be a little bit undervalued, and, you know, again, day two or preferably day three. So that's kind of where I go with that. With the receivers, Bean has mentioned it several times. He is looking for somebody that offers yak or rack, whatever your preferred term is. You know, somebody that can be explosive and make plays without the ball. And I know that they value Gabe Davis and what he brought as a blocker. So, you know, and again, it's not that you necessarily have to be a great blocker, but you have to be a willing blocker. And so, you know, the kind of the anti-George Pickens thing where it's like, you know, if the ball's not coming to him, he's just kind of lollygagging out there and not trying. They want to see effort. And I think they value somebody that brings special teams ability as well. Because, again, versatility, not having to take up multiple roster spots for just a special teamer. And I think that's something that McDermott is kind of coming around to, the idea that he can't have five or six spots for guys that just play kickoff or just play, you know, punt team or whatever. Like, they got to be able to do multiple things. So for receivers, I look for the guys that have, I know that you like Worthy, but to me, for example, he offers great speed and he offers, you know, a lot of production down there at Texas, but he's just a little small. And I don't know if he offers as much on special teams to kind of be our guy. Now, he might go to another team and be great, but I don't know if he's the type of guy for us. I think ideally we're probably looking in the, you know, the guys that we've talked to, Brian Thomas Jr., Xavier Leggett, Xavier Worthy is a possibility, Troy Franklin, Keon Coleman. I'm not too big on Coleman. We'll see how he does this weekend. And the thing is, all these guys have something that makes them special, and they all have something that gives you a little bit of pause for concern. You know, for Troy Franklin, it's the fact that there have not been a great track record of guys of his stature as far as being as thin as he is that have had success you know, in the pro game. Most recent one being Tyquan Thornton as the top, right? So for the Jet, it's your breakup.
Randy, something with your audio, maybe. I'm having some trouble with your audio. Let me check. It's so loud now. Can you hear me? Yeah, now it's frozen. So, still talking about what Randy was talking about as he fixed his connection there, maybe a connection problem. But a guy that I really feel like he can help himself a lot with running a great 40, for example, is Xavier Worthy. For example, I like Worthy over Franklin. I really do. He's in my opinion a better deep threat. He's not as tall as Franklin, but I feel he tracks the ball better. I feel he offers more after catch. I really like Worthy over Franklin. And running a good 40-yard dash can help him a lot there to establish himself as even an option at round one, at number 28 for the Bills. I feel like that's possible. Another guy that I love, and I love even more than Worthy, is the other Texas guy, Adonai Mitchell. And there have been some reports about how smooth he's being and how smoothly he runs his routes and how jacked up his legs are, how strong his legs are. That guy is big, 6'3". So if he can really measure well and if he can really test well as it's expected, I feel like he can establish himself as a solid option at the end of round one with his physical traits and his tape. Right, and another guy that might be a guy that I feel can help himself a lot testing well as it's expected is Randy's guy Xavier Legette. Right, so Randy,
yeah,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So I was talking about how I really feel like I feel like some guys like Xavier Worthy. I like him over Franklin. I feel like if he can run a 4-point, a long 4.3, or even a high 4.2, he can maybe pass Franklin and become an option for the Bills at 128. Adonai Mitchell, the guy that I love the most on this obviously after the top three. At wide receiver, people have talked about how jacked up his legs are, how he can, how they are expecting him to jump out of the field with his testing, and how he can really test well. If he can really test well with his tape, I feel he can establish himself as an option late in the round one, not only for the Bills, but we know the Ravens are there, the Chiefs are there, so and. And your guy, Xavier Legette, right? That guy, if he tests really well, he seems like another DK Metcalf out there. Like, so
AJ Brown is the better comp. It's AJ Brown.
Yeah, AJ, no doubt, AJ Brown. You know who I remember? Who reminds me? AJ Brown is the guy from LSU, Brian Thomas. When I see him, I remember AJ Brown for some reason. But Legette, no doubt, you even. Followed him more closely than me. And we have Leo with another question here about Xavier Legette, right? Your tweet actually regarding Legette. And do you feel like he's worth the number 128? Do you think the Bills might be able to take him in the second round? I feel like the testing will determine it because the tape is really there for all those prospects, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's very much going to come down to what happens this week, what happens Saturday. Look, I am very confident that he's going to run in the 4.3s, probably the low 4.3s, And I think the rest of the testing is going to tell the story. You know, he could be in the situation where, like with Metcalf, where they were worried about the three cone and it causes him to drop some. But if he blows all that out of the water, there's really no reason why he shouldn't be in the conversation at 28. I don't think he gets past 40, 42. So if we wanted to try and roll the dice and wait for him to drop in the second, I think you've got to come up from 60. And what does that cost? You know, versus taking him at 28, getting a fifth-year option. It's going to overlap on Stephon Diggs. You still try and get somebody later. You don't have to trade any other picks. And in the second round, you can come back and get whatever defensive player you want, whether it's a safety, whether it's one of the D linemen or one of the edge players, whoever. But that's kind of where I'm at with this, where we are with the process and taking a receiver at 28 versus waiting in the second. Like, I feel like the best guys left at receiver aren't going to get to 60. So you really need to either come up from 60 or just take one at 28. Understand that best case scenario, you get him for 5 years of his career. And then after that, you worry about the extension. But that's 5 years down the road. You shouldn't have to worry about that right now. You know, that's what I think.
I feel like if they really like one, two, three guys, even they are sure those guys are first round type guys, first round grades. They can't really move down so much because they risk losing those guys. Just like I said, Ravens are out there, Chiefs out there, and it's not guaranteed to have a pick in the start or in the middle of the second round and be able to guarantee one of those guys, right? So maybe the Bills will force, if they go wide receiver, depending on what happens in the free agency, they'll be forced to stay there and make the pick. So they guarantee one of the guys that they really like. And one good thing about this wide receiver group, I don't know if you agree with me there, but I feel like even if you don't get your guy, your favorite guy, like for you, it's Leggett. For me, it's Adonai Mitchell. But for a lot of people, it's Franklin, right? But even if it's not your guy who's drafted there, I feel like the other guys, you can kind of convince yourself, you can sell yourself on them. Like you want, I personally wouldn't be totally, I wouldn't be mad if Leggett is the pick. By the time he's the pick, I would be 100% committed to support it and to believe the guy has a lot to offer, a lot of great traits to offer, you know. And for example, I have Worthy over Franklin, but if Franklin is the pick, I can't understand why they went that direction, and I can't get excited about what Franklin has to offer. Even Coleman, who a lot of people are worried about, if Coleman is the pick, man, I'm all over being excited about his size, his speed combination, his potential on going and grab those 50-50 balls for Josh. And obviously it can work or not, but I can see why the Bills went the direction, and I learned to trust them, because when certain number 17 was drafted, I hated it, but the traits were there, right? And I could kind of see why they were there, so I need to live with there, because they saw the traits, they saw something that I couldn't see, and they are trusting, and it was worth it, right? So
it's okay. You weren't the only one that didn't believe in Josh. I just know that I wasn't one of those guys. I was a Josh Allen truther from like 2016.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So, you know, I could give you tips about what to look for, but yeah, I mean, I was ecstatic. I wasn't on Twitter at the time, but the entire draft process, I was telling people that I work with, I was like, this is the guy. This is the number one stud in this class. Like, I'd take him first overall. Like, and on top of that, not just is he the best quarterback, but he's like the perfect fit for the Bills, like for that town, for that team. Like, they're going to freaking love this guy. And the fact that it worked out that way, and it has worked out for us in the way that it has, is just like, I've never hit on a pick that good before. Like, it's by far the biggest home run I've ever called. you know, as far as draft picks go. And like sometimes people are like, oh yeah, whatever, bullshit. You didn't say that. Like, and I wish I could record the conversations that I was having at work where I'm like, you know, just basically screaming at people about like, you know, this is the guy. Like, we gotta take this guy. We gotta do whatever we can.
The right Josh, not the wrong Josh.
Yeah, not the wrong Josh, right? Yeah. Oh man, I hated Rosen. Everything about him, I was like, I can't believe, because I would listen to like WGR, you know, through the web or whatever. And like they're talking about Rosen this and Rosen that. And I'm like, what is these people's obsession with this loser? Like, why? What on earth do they see in this kid? Like, I know I'm not missing something, because I spent like a solid 18 months researching everybody, like all the quarterbacks in that class, you know? Everything possible about him that was available for public consumption, like I had. And so, and that's why I was so big on Josh. People were like, oh, completion percentage. Like, that's not everything. Like, you don't understand where this guy comes from. So it was just one of those things where I would not be moved about where I was on Josh. And so I'm ecstatic that he's turned out the way that he has. Transferring that to this year and this conversation, I think that there's a lot to like about a lot of the receivers in this class. And you could easily talk yourself into any one of them being a good fit for us. It's really eye of the beholder and what Bean values the most. I think he's already told us that he values Yak and Rack. He values a guy that can take a short ball and take it the distance. I don't think you see a lot of that with a guy like Keon Coleman. I question whether you could see a lot of that with a Troy Franklin, given his body build. So it kind of narrows it down a little bit. I think you could see that from Worthy if he were to add a little bit of weight just to be able to make it through. And one, aside from being a guy from my college team, South Carolina, but one of the reasons why I like Leggett so much is because he does offer three-phase special team ability, you know, as far as he's returned punts, albeit not very many. He has returned kicks, and he has played gunner. And he even talked about it in his press conference today, I believe it was, where he said he takes pride in playing special teams. And even if he's a starter, he'll still play special teams. That's going to go a long way with teams and probably the Bills as far as like knowing what kind of guy he is. But then also his ability with his speed, with his body size and his build, and the fact that we've seen him, and I'll keep saying this when anybody wants to challenge it. He is supposed to be clocked in the 429 to 433 range. You see it on tape. You saw it against Mississippi State, where he had two separate long touchdowns. One down a sideline where he was catching a deep ball and then pulled away from a defender. And I say that again, pulled away from a defender who was in his hip pocket. Okay? That's where the speed shows up. That's where the explosion shows up. Then, on a completely different route, he takes a five-yard crosser, and you can see it. It's all over the place. He takes a five-yard crosser, cuts in between like five different defenders, and takes it to the house like 70-plus yards. Pulling away from them at every level. You don't see that everywhere, and especially not a guy who's 6'1 and 224 or 223. You don't see that everywhere. And so to add that to the Bills and what Josh Allen does and what Josh Allen can be with Dalton Kincaid and with Stephon Diggs and with Khalil Shakir, you take a look at the fit on top of just the raw numbers. He's a guy that can make a big difference for us on special teams and on offense from the beginning. That's why I'm so high on. It's not just because he's a guy from my favorite school.
Man, and listening to you talk about all those exceptional highlights and plays from Leggett, it reminds me how people said and what we could see on tape from another guy who was drafted really high, but hasn't been good in the league because the testing wasn't really good, but it seems like that testing will support all that we've seen on the field. And that guy's Treylon Burks, you know, like from the Titans, because that guy, he was a big guy as well, over 220 pounds. And a guy who was supposed to be able to go downfield, but a guy who was sometimes lining up even as a running back and running some catching some screens and taking to the house and offering all that stuff that you mentioned about Leggett. But when the combine arrived, he couldn't test well in the combine, and the red flags started to appear. It seems like Leggett has all of that and more because he will have the tests, right? It seems like this for Leggett, and man, just like I told you, if he's the pick for the Bills, and first of all, I hope you're right as I was with Josh in the first place, right? If he's the pick for the Bills. And second place, I find it easy to get excited about all he has to offer for the team. And that were some interesting observations about what Bean has already said about what they want, and McDermott as well, how they value yards after catch, how they value explosive plays, how they value, and we know they value special teams as well, and they might not be in position to invest that much on special teams this year with Matakevich, with Cyron Neal. You know, those guys earn some money for special teams, and having your wide receiver first round pick being willing to contribute and having experience and the size and the skill to contribute on special teams, it's an easy way to have the guy activated every week and to bring him on that offense. So
I wanted to touch on Treylon Burks for a second, because I've seen that comp before. And frankly, I think that has more to do with body type than it does with the actual athletic performance. Because if you pull up, like, you know, Treylon Burks' RAS, for example, and we'll go over it right now. So, for example, 40-yard dash is 4.55. Mm. I'll come in wearing an eye patch next time if Xavier Leggett runs a 4.55. There ain't no way that's happening. Even if he's still hurt from the Senior Bowl, there's no way he's running a 4.55. 20-yard split, 2.65. 10-yard split, 1.57. Mm-mm. No way. Not a chance. Shuttle, 4.4. Three cones, 7.28. Not happening. Like I said, the closer comp is A.J. Brown. So if we pull up that one, for example, A.J. Brown, right at 6 foot, Leggett's a little bit bigger. He's 6'1", right? There you go. You got it.
He's worse, right? Let me take Brown.
A.J. Brown ran a 4.49. Mm. I'm telling you, Leggett's going to run in the 4.3s. It might be 4.36. It might be 4.31. Hell. Hey. He might even run 4.29. We don't know yet. But it ain't going to be anywhere close to that. And it's not that 4.45 isn't fast. It is. If Keon Coleman runs a 4.45, I think it's going to help him out a lot. But there are better expectations out there for Leggett. You pull up A.J. Brown and you see that his – let's see, what do we have here? 20-yard split, 2.59 versus the 2.85 of Treylon Burks. I think more than likely Leggett's going to be on the A.J. Brown side of things. I don't know if you can side-by-side them there for the audience, but I think more than likely you're going to see Leggett more on the A.J. Brown side than on Treylon Burks. So while I get it from a body type comp for Burks versus Leggett, again, I keep coming back to because what? Burks, let's see, he's 6'2 and 225. So, yeah, that's close to Leggett. But he's just so much more explosive and athletic than Burks was. And again, Burks is a first-round pick. So, you know, you could easily make a case that if Leggett is similar to DK or A.J. Brown and Burks went in the first, then why wouldn't Leggett go in the first? Mm-hmm. You know, aside from whatever this fifth-year breakout biases, the fact that he didn't break out for 5 years. I could point to the fact that they had a stocked receiver room for several years in front of him. You know, they had guys like Bryan Edwards and Shai Smith, and they had, what's his name, Juice Wells last year, and also with a tight end that ended up transferring to Florida State. So he was kind of caught behind some guys. You could say that. You could say just the light didn't come on until this year, but either way, it did. And one of the other things that I've pointed out previously on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, is that Leggett is one of the only top receivers in this draft group to produce as a number one receiver with no help. Yeah. Adnan Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, duo. Brian Thomas Jr. and Malik Nabers, duo. They were able to play off each other. Even
Polk and Odunze.
Yeah, Odunze and Polk and McMillan. They had a trio. Yeah. You know, your tight end down there at Texas was a big weapon in the past game as well for them. They had a trio going on down there. And of course, Marvin Harrison Jr. at Ohio State. I mean, you know, that's a little bit of a different story. Ohio State's usually stacked and you know, that is what it is. But as far as being a guy that had little to no help, was a number one receiver, everybody knew it. You know, after week one, everybody knew, well, shit, South Carolina has nothing other than Spencer Rattler throwing it to Xavier Leggett, and that's it. That's all they got. Because they didn't have a second receiver. Their tight end, Trey Knox, was a nice guy, but he wasn't really a big part of the passing game either. So, and Leggett still performed despite being the central focus. They had nothing to draw coverage and attention away from him, and he still performed the entire year.
Yeah, that's big. That's big, and that's something that the Bills certainly will consider. Man, I am excited. I'm excited to watch those wide receiver testing, and I'm excited for the Bills because I feel like they can really find a nice weapon for Josh there. And if it's like that, you are certainly making me more of a believer with all those conversation, man. I really appreciate it. And I feel like Bills Mafia feels the same. Randy, really appreciate, man, you taking your time. We could stay here and talk Bills forever, as always, right? So I really always enjoy having you on the show. That there is a reason I invite you so often, because it's always a great talk, and I really appreciate you joining. And I feel like Bills Mafia feels the same way. Thank you, man.
I appreciate it, man. I hope everyone enjoys this weekend and, you know, gets as much out of the combine as they want. And, you know, just take all the information that you get over the next few days. And I'll say just digest it and don't let one particular thing really sway you too far in one direction or another. It's all part of the evaluation if you want to be as balanced as possible in looking at all these prospects. But it's fun. It's a great weekend. It's always a good time. And, you know, hope everybody enjoys it.
Awesome. Bills Mafia, thank you so much. Hit that like button. Subscribe to Buffalo Ramblings. This episode will be live. Sorry, it is live, but will be right after available in the Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well. I'll be back on Sunday with the Portuguese version of the Leading the Charge for Brazil and all the Latin America countries, the Portuguese-speaking countries. So see you there. Thank you so much for joining us. And as always, go Bills!